Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, y'all. Seven Rounds in Heaven is back. We're brought to you by the Armchair Media Network. Nick Saban has done it again. But could he beat the Jaguars? It is I, Rob Paul, a.k.a. this podcast's big stupid loser. And with me, as always, is AJ. Roll Tide, Marchese.
Am I just a little stupid loser for Saturday?
You're a winner because of Alabama.
Okay, good. Roll Tide.
But you have no conference pride, and I'll never forget that. Today, we're talking everything that happened in the Natty and some of the biggest risers and sliders of the college football season.
That's it.
Seven
rounds in heaven with my baby, driving up to Cleveland, maybe looking for a Lawrence or Sewell. Don't draft specialists on the first day, eh? Don't draft specialists on the second day, eh? Maybe draft a punter in the sixth. We'll see. Let's go seven rounds. Let's go seven rounds together. Let's go seven rounds forever. And that's a song.
The wait is finally over. Football is in full effect, and the NBA is back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at Bet Online. Bet Online is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on everything imaginable this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, Bet Online gives you more options to wager than any place online. Head to Bet Online today and use promo code ARMCHAIR to take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Bet Online. Your online sportsbook expert. Before we talk about the embarrassment that is this year's national championship game, a couple declarations, a couple Senior Bowl things. AJ, you know the drill. Here are the declarations. Indiana receiver Wop Fillier. Oklahoma pass rusher Ronnie Perkins. Texas A&M defensive lineman Bobby Brown. Kentucky linebacker Jamin Davis, Oklahoma State safety Kobe Harvell-Peel, and Florida kicker Evan McPherson. Who gets your juices flowing?
Ronnie Perkins had the best stretch after obviously coming off suspension and raised his draft stock the most out of that group, I think, and definitely the most interesting guy. I think he's going to go the highest of that group right there.
Wow, I'm surprised you didn't pick the kicker.
He had a really good year, but I mean... You know, I feel I want them to stay as long as they can.
Yeah, Perkins, obviously, he dominated Florida in the bowl game, too. Mm-hmm. Should test really well. He's a top 100 lock. Well, I mean, nothing's locked, but that's what it feels like.
Yeah.
I was just looking into some of the pass rushers today, actually, and it is... shaping up again, not to be, there's no Chase Young, but it is so much deeper than last year's class.
Yeah, and didn't we talk about how after Chase Young on the last episode, how disappointing the pass rushing group was last year, like yeah. As rookies? Yeah, no, definitely. And I mean, we knew even like, I don't know, September that this was a deeper group without a top end guy, but even more guys just kept kind of emerging, right? Neither of us were Ronnie Perkins fans in the summer, and look at him now. Like you just said, he's a potential top 100 lock. So,
yeah, nasty get off, nasty yeah. Flexibility, ripping dips, all there. Yeah, he should be a day two lock at least.
Agreed.
I'm also a little bit excited to see Wop Fillier.
Yeah, what was his bowl stat line? He had like a 17 catch for 80 yards or something.
Yeah, like he's a good fit for today's NFL with what he does as a yak player, and he's a bit of a Swiss Army knife, line up in the slot. I think he's gonna be an interesting day three receiver.
No, that's a good point. And like the fun thing is there's a good group of those you know, kind of gadgety, do everything type of receivers for you, right?
Yeah, big time. He's day three Rondale Moore.
Pretty much, yeah.
Who's day two Kadarius Toney.
There you go.
Okay, Senior Bowl stuff. They announced the coaching staffs. We got the Miami Dolphins and Carolina Panthers. Jim Nagy is, no matter what, making sure this goes down. So there you go. I'm pretty excited about both those coaching staffs.
Yeah, I think they're like pretty much perfect picks. Getting Matt Rhule and Brian Flores in there.
Two of the, I mean, Flores legitimately one of the better head coaches in the league. And Matt Rhule looks like he's putting something together in Carolina. Obviously, they need to hire a GM still, but it'll be fun. It'll be fun, and, I mean, the Dolphins have so many picks. Maybe they'll draft some of these guys.
It's a big advantage for the Dolphins, especially if there's whispers of the combine not happening and you know, maybe visits going to be limited again like last year. So getting there in Mobile is going to be – and like you said, Jim's not going to not let this happen. So being there in Mobile is going to be huge for both these coaching staffs, but especially the Dolphins with those plethora of picks.
And I can tell you one thing for certain. Both of them have top 10 picks. None of the quarterbacks there are going to catch their eye with those picks.
Can I also say that I expect both of these coaching staffs to run fun practices?
I think so, too. I mean, I think we're both a little biased because we both love Matt Rhule and Brian Flores so much, but both defensive guys, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If Joe Brady's still the Panthers OC, I'm excited to see kind of what he does there. Especially with some of these pass catchers.
For sure. It's also kind of cool, you know, Rhule and Brady, potentially, just 1 year removed from being college coaches. Coaching in the Senior Bowl is kind of a neat angle, too.
There you go. That's why AJ is on the show. Thinks of things in the angles I don't. okay, we got a couple more acceptances as well. Oklahoma running back Ramondre Stevenson, Duke tight end Noah Gray, and USC defensive lineman Marlon Tupulutu.
I mean, the showcase isn't really the running backs in Mobile, but seeing Ramondre Stevenson there is still going to be a ton of fun. Literally, because he's a massive man.
Especially because, obviously, national championship game. Trey Sermon might have broke his collarbone, which is a big ding to the senior running back group in Mobile. And Stevenson and Sermon, I think, helped themselves more than anybody down the stretch this season. Definitely. So I was pretty excited to see Sermon there, and if he's not able to go. Stevenson's another really interesting guy. It's a fun running back group in general. I mean, my boy Michael Carter's there. Your boy Dimitri Felton's there. And then there's a couple more day three guys, but those four are pretty exciting. I'm pretty excited to see.
I mean, yeah, like we've talked about the softness of the running back group, or at least we did back in, I don't know, October. And it always kind of felt like you're going to find guys emerged. And I kind of more expected to find it on tape rather than all these guys that kind of popped since then, you know, like down the stretch, like you said, Sermon and Stevenson were monsters. And just seeing Stevenson there being that big old man. More so in the game, you get to see it, just running guys over. That's going to be fun.
It's going to be a Seahawk.
probably rough.
Hey, we're only like 17 days until the Senior Bowl. Hope you've been grinding the Senior Bowl guys' tapes for a Senior Bowl special. I know I have. I'm excited.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, all things considered, I didn't think it was going to happen. So I'm excited it is, I guess. I am.
Good pass rusher group, too. I have the roster open right now. It's a really cool group in general. Lots of talent this year.
Yeah, no, that's true. I'm excited. Good work, Mr. Nagy. You get some respect to be
coach as Mr. always.
Nagy now. Yeah.
As always. I call him Coach Nagy.
The ultimate form of respect.
Okay, so yes, Alabama won the national championship 52-24 over the Ohio State. Devonta Smith was named offensive MVP of the game, had 12 catches, 215 yards, and 3 touchdowns. All came in the first half before he dislocated his finger. Defensive MVP, Christian Barmore, 5 tackles, 2 TFLs, and a sack. Those two were on a tear. Well, I mean, Devonta Smith was a fucking Heisman, so obviously he was on a tear. Christian Barmore, though, over the last 6 games of Alabama's season, 6 sacks. Has played, I think he's going to end up consensus top interior defensive lineman in this class. We talked about starting the summer, his potential.
Yeah.
It was kind of a slower start. He missed 2 games with an injury. And then he took off down the stretch, and he's clearly I think his tape against Notre Dame and against Ohio State are going to be probably the 2 best interior defensive lineman tapes in this class. To me, right now, he's probably the only guy I view as a first-round pick in the interior defensive line class. And he did it against an Ohio State offensive line that has multiple NFL guys on it.
Yep.
I'm focusing more on him just because we've come to expect this from the great Devonta Smith.
No, for sure. Like, I totally agree. And it was kind of funny that, like, you know, right before the SEC championship game, we were pegging Barmore as a potential guy that's going to kind of dominate the next 3 games. And he came out and did that. And definitely no one in this game and in the playoffs did more for their stock than Christian Barmore. And I totally agree that he looks like IDL1, as many anticipated in the summer, like you said.
And nobody did less for their stock, maybe, in the playoff games than Sean Wade.
100% correct.
Who Devonta Smith got the best of more than a few times. It wasn't just like he was doing it to anyone they put on him, like when Tough Borland had to cover him, that was sick. Yeah, Gary Coombs just playing cover 3 no matter what, and Tough Borland has covered the 3rd, and it's Devonta Smith who goes for a 42 yard touchdown. But yeah, when Sean Wade needed a strong playoff, he didn't have it against Notre Dame, and once again, not against Alabama. Smith shook him once at the line. It was nasty. Smith had that wild back shoulder catch where it just showed off his body control in his hands. The orbit motion touchdown.
Yeah.
That was sick, which, I mean, Texas fans are probably super excited to see what Sark does with some of their guys, seeing the way he consistently gets Devonta Smith open no matter what. I think that's kind of the best attribute about Sark's play calling.
Devonta Smith had, the greatest receiver season in college football history and is arguably the greatest receiver in college football history.
Easily arguable, for sure. Going back to Wade, it was obviously tough on Devonta, and you highlighted a lot of the stuff. He also got run over by Najee, but he made a nice TFL on Harris in the backfield. He couldn't cover...
He's a safety.
When I saw that play, because he was lined up, you know, it was known on to the side, so he was just kind of... He was lined up basically as a safety. And he came down to make the TFL. That was the first thought that popped in my head. We saw him. He couldn't cover, a limping Jalen Waddle on that one comeback route.
Oh, I forgot about that one.
Yeah. I mean, and then, like you said, the orbit. So, like some of it kind of looked like he was half-assing it out there. Like, I don't want to call him out and say that, but I don't know.
No, he's just that slow.
Or he might be that slow, yeah. But to be honest, though, he looks, okay on the short in-breaking stuff because he had the PBU on Mechie at the goal line. He had another one that who was it on? It was on Smith, I think, where the throw wasn't great, but it hit Wade right in. He was in good coverage, but it hit him right in the stomach. He didn't make the pick. That was right before half. There were a couple plays that are terrible overall.
Yeah, so with him, I'm wondering, and maybe a little bit more on this later when we talk about biggest sliders of the season. I'm wondering, because, I mean, he's a redshirt junior. He can still go back. Anyone can go back. But so I'm wondering what decision he'll make. And I'm also wondering where, his draft stock.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's not a first-round pick, but is he a day 2 pick? Or is he viewed as a nickel? Is he viewed as a safety? He's going to be an interesting guy to watch.
Yeah. He's got 6 days to make the decision.
There you go. Ages, the days, counter.
5, actually, when you're listening to this. There you go.
and obviously, Devonta Smith's always the star of the show, and Najee Harris is always slightly overshadowed by that. But, I mean, 79 on the ground, 79
through the air, 3 total touchdowns. He had on that wheel route, that kind of one-handed pulled it in, made a couple defenders look silly, scored a touchdown.
You know which one was fun? Sorry to cut you off there. The one at the goal line where they gave it to him on the pass, and he got lit up as he was catching the ball, but he still caught it, and he didn't fall. And that's like, holy fuck, what a powerful guy.
I saw a different angle of that, and it was targeting. But because it's Najee Harris, he just absorbed it. There's no flag.
It was stud. I love that. Who was that Proctor that laid up? They hit him, right?
Yeah.
Proctor fell on his ass. Najee barely got knocked back. And still, I don't know how he reeled the ball in either. That was awesome. Obviously, it didn't go anywhere, but it was still awesome.
Najee Harris had, like, I think 1,800 or so yards from scrimmage this year and 30 touchdowns.
In a year where Devonta Smith didn't put up those numbers and it was like a regular Bama offense, he would have been an easy Heisman winner.
Yeah, no, it's crazy that he came fifth in the Heisman despite those numbers. But he's the greatest running back in Alabama history by the numbers. He's the school record holder, and he passed Derrick Henry in rushing yards in a career, passed Derrick Henry in rushing touchdowns in a season, and passed Sean Alexander for career rushing touchdowns.
It didn't feel like it, but like
it's also easy for him. Every game, it felt like he was a grown ass man against high school kids.
For real, no, definitely.
I do want to point out one Ohio State player who I thought had a nice little game, Baron Browning. He had the strip sack. Mm-hmm. I thought he looked good in coverage. He had a couple disruptive plays. He sniffed out was it a bubble screen to the flat? He just looked like he was like the one Ohio State defender making plays.
Yeah.
The defensive line didn't show up. I know there was no Tyreek Smith or Tommy Togiai, but like Haskell Garrett and Jonathan Cooper were non-existent. The Alabama offensive line dominated them. Deontay Brown's the largest human I've ever seen.
I thought Hilliard wasn't bad for stretches. He made a couple flash plays, but it was like, yeah, Baron Browning definitely came up the biggest, but not much else. Disappointing performance, obviously, for Ohio State, but like even like just the individual ones, like you said, on the defensive line, Togiai and Smith, they weren't really winning anything. So, sorry. Cooper.
What?
No, nothing.
Yeah, I knew you meant Cooper and Garrett.
It's okay. Yeah.
It's hard to blame Justin Fields. Like, I didn't think Fields played terribly by any stretch. He was clearly dealing with the injury,
mm-hmm.
which is a hip pointer, but certainly seems more rib oriented.
Yeah.
The offensive line didn't play that great for him. He had a couple throws that looked really good. That outbreaking route to Chris Olave. The Jeremy Rucker one handed catch that was a laser throw.
It was kind of like Trevor Lawrence's game last week, but not to this extent.
That's a good way to look at it. Where it's like,
yeah,
he didn't put up monstrous numbers, but he didn't play poorly, and it was more lack of help around him. And obviously, Trey Sermon got one carry and was done.
Yeah, that was for sure the biggest part of this game. Oh, well, not the biggest part, but it was huge because we saw how dominant Sermon was down the stretch.
I think it was pretty clear based on the way Ryan Day called plays throughout that game was Trey Sermon was going to be the focus of their offensive game plan, because even once he was gone, they were running the ball. Even when they were in a hole, they still wouldn't consistently go to the passing game. And to me, that said Justin Fields isn't healthy, and the game plan was always going to be just hammer Trey Sermon down their throat. And obviously, they couldn't because he got hurt, and Master Teague's an okay back, but he's not Trey Sermon.
Yeah, no, definitely. One other thing I will give Fields is that he ran the ball pretty well. What, 67 yards, and well-timed scrambled and was picking up meaningful yards when they needed it too. I thought that was maybe an underappreciated aspect in this game too.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, he's gonna be a top 5 pick unless he comes back.
Anyone else you really want to, like, it's so funny that Devonta Smith can go out and do that. And we're like, yeah, he was just Devonta Smith. Like any other player
having the first half.
And yeah, exactly. Any other player having that type of game, it would be the only one we're talking about.
John Mechie's next.
Yeah, Mechie, baby. Brampton, let's go. Would you the ratings were bad? Would you I know you're an Ohio State fan, but putting that aside, what do you think of the game overall? Just as a pure viewing standpoint,
it was exciting. I thought the first quarter was okay. Alabama scores.
Yep.
Everyone, I feel like, was like, oh no, this isn't going to be good. Like, that was my thought, at least. And me too. Obviously, I'm a little biased, but I think because the vast majority of people thought Alabama would roll them, and they did obviously end up rolling them. But yeah, after that first score, I think everyone thought it was over right then.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, Ohio State doesn't score in their first drive. Alabama scores 7-0. But then Ohio State instantly responds. Mm-hmm. Alabama scores again. Ohio State responds again. Alabama scores again. Then when they kick the field goal on the Ohio State next scoring drive, that's when I was like, I had a bad feeling.
Yeah.
That is when they ran away. And then they just scored two more before half. And it was 35-17. And even like that's, you can overcome that, but it didn't feel like they could because it felt like they had to keep up with Alabama scoring wise to stay in this game because they weren't going to stop Alabama's defense or Alabama's offense.
Definitely.
Like the only way to stop Alabama's offense is to pressure Mac Jones. That's my guess because he's never been pressured, so we don't actually know. And Ohio State could not get to him. Kerry Coombs basically played Ohio State only ever is very cover one heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Single high heavy. And Kerry Coombs loves cover three. And Sark just RPO'd them to death against that and get all these fancy ass designs to get Devonta Smith the ball. And
it
just felt like Ohio State didn't know how to adjust. And even when they did play a little bit of too high, it didn't matter at all because Alabama's got a ridiculous amount of talent.
I totally agree. Like the game was really fun up until that field goal, and that felt like they just fucked that up.
Even before that, when Ohio State punted, when they probably should have gone for it,
yeah,
and it was I think it was 21-14. Ohio State punted, but then that's when Baron Browning had the strip sack, and it was like, yeah. Oh no, they're not dead yet, and then they kicked the field goal, and then they were dead.
Going back to the Sark thing, this is a very this is in my head big time right now, but it's funny watching so many. I know I'm not going to compare the pros to the college experience, but it's amazing watching Sark design those plays and like so many offenses around all of football just have zero creativity. And you know which one I'm specifically talking about. But it's so like they make it look so easy. Like I know they're loaded with talent, but the way they were designing the ball to Devonta Smith, it's like, why can't more offensive coordinators do those things? And it's like, it seems so simple, but so there's so many bad offensive coordinators in football, and there might be even more worse defensive coordinators. So it's just frustrating when you can see a guy move his guy all around the field and other teams can't do anything, you know, especially some of the NFL teams.
Hey, that's why NFL's getting smarter and hiring people like Joe Brady.
There you go. Anything else on this game?
No, but I do have something else to tell you, AJ.
What is it, Rob?
In your free time, there's no college football anymore, but in your free time, there's still NFL playoffs. I know you're watching Michigan dominate Wisconsin
in
basketball right now. And in the NBA, when they aren't postponing games and they're playing them, you can gamble on all these things, and you can do so at Bet Online. Bet Online is the best sports betting online book in the business, and use the code armchair to take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. That's Bet Online. You're online sports book experts.
We are driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match.
Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, AJ. Next, we've got our five biggest risers and sliders of the college football season. Because it's over for the next 7 months, there will be no college football, but there will be spring games soon enough. My favorite time of year. Do you want to start with sliders or risers?
Let's start on the low note and end on the high note.
Wow, you're such an upbeat person.
Sure.
Do you want to start with your biggest slider or your fifth biggest slider?
You know, first let's start at the top. For sliders, I thought there was less. My riser list heavier than my slider list. I think the biggest slider clearly was.
We've only got five, AJ. How many did you write?
I don't know, a bunch. I don't have to name them all, Rob. It's good to be prepared.
No, I want to know now.
Oh, fuck. I think easily the biggest slider was Marvin Wilson because, what was he, consistent?
Oh, okay. I've got Sean Wade.
Sean Wade's my number two. Wilson was what? Consistently mocked top 15 in September, and then now I don't know if he's a top 100 pick.
I put him in my honorable mentions.
Oh, okay. No, I think he really. This is funny. It depends what time we're talking, but if we're talking October, then no. But if we're talking before the season, he's clearly like the biggest guy. Cause he's supposed to be IDL one, supposed to be a top 15 dude. Yeah.
No, I don't. I think the problem, or maybe why I viewed it differently was I went through old mock drafts too, to just see how things have changed. And he was one of like a couple guys who was consistently mocked in the first round. That's definitely not going in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember the talk around him was always like he's got day two-ish tape.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of projection that he would take that Derrick Brown jump because Derrick Brown was in a similar boat heading into his senior season. Obviously, Marvin Wilson did not do that. And it's just not a great interior defensive line class in general. So I am interested to see if he does still end up in day two. It feels like the Senior Bowl is going to be a huge spot for him just because he's been out of people's thoughts for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But no, he definitely is one of the biggest ones.
Yeah, I mean, and if we want to jump to Sean Wade, we already talked about it mightily, and I think we almost got onto the conversation, but does he go back? I mean, he's clearly not a first round pick. Is he a day two pick right now? I'm not sure. after those performances. So, I mean, if he's not a day two pick, and I mean, he has to figure that out, the benefit is to go back, right?
You would think, but I don't know. We always see guys declare who are going to go undrafted, so I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's true. But I don't like.
It's interesting with Sean Wade. Obviously, he shifts to outside corner this season after Damon Arnette and Jeff Okuda go in the first round. He played nickel all of 2019, and he looked good at nickel. Everyone liked him at nickel.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't first round tape, but the thought process was his skill set is better fit for the outside. He shifts to the outside. Turns out his poor footwork, lack of ball skills, and not great athleticism were taken advantage of more frequently on the outside. And he couldn't be used as much as a disruptive force player on the outside.
Yep.
Whereas at nickel, like, they blitzed him a ton last year as a nickel. He was more impactful around the line of scrimmage as a nickel. And he used that physicality to just bully smaller slot receivers. And in theory, the physicality and the size would fit covering bigger receivers, but he would just wasn't, in just by my eyes, wasn't able to overwhelm them the same way. So it impacted his game.
Yeah, I've been saying all year, I felt like he was physically outmatched by a lot of the bigger receivers on the outside.
Yeah. And yeah. So I do think in the next level, he's way more interesting as a safety who can come down and play some nickel and
yeah.
be like a classic strong safety in today's NFL. Maybe a Kenny Vaccaro-esque player. But yeah, it's going to be hard to... Jesus. I think I got a new neighbor, AJ.
Congratulations.
A lot of noise. but it's going to be hard to gauge where, at this point, like, the tape's not good.
No.
So are you willing to bet on him in the third round making a transition to a new position?
If you're doing that, it's last year's tape and it's pedigree, right? Like, that's the two things. You're scouting the helmet a little more than the player, I think. Yeah, it's tough. And I Dane Brugler dropped a mock today. He wasn't in the first two rounds of his mock. So yeah, I definitely think it's round three at best, and I'm not even sure there. So like, and like, even if he were to go back to Ohio State, would they play him? Like, would they play him where he should be played, like last year, or back in the slot, or move him to safety? Like, so I don't know. It's a tough call, and we'll find out in the next 5-6 days, whatever the hell it is. Monday, it's the deadline.
My number two biggest slider is, because Wade was your number two, right?
Yep.
My number two is Dylan Moses.
It's my number three, Rob.
Obviously, massive 2018 season, tore his ACL before 2019, opted to return for 2020, and never looked quite the same, and said he was playing through knee pain the whole year, really struggled in coverage. You saw him get beat in coverage, it felt like every game, and he just didn't look nearly as explosive working sideline to sideline as a run defender. He went from a potential top 15 pick to maybe a second round pick, especially didn't help him that this linebacker class is very strong.
I don't think he's a second round pick. I think he's kind of the same Sean Wade boat there. And it's another guy that it was some confusion about whether or not he was coming out last year, that his dad got involved. He's a lawyer. It was weird. And obviously he went back to Alabama and it nothing went right this year for him. Definitely one of the big ones. I don't know. Do you think he's going top 100?
I don't know, because it's so dependent on medicals. Like, if he's still playing with knee pain, that's a big worry.
Yeah, no, for sure. That's a tricky one. I definitely thought Wilson, Wade, and Moses were the clear top three. I think after that you can
Okay, I've got a different Florida State player as my third.
Okay, you say who it is, and it's probably my fourth guy.
Tamori and Terry?
Yeah, he's my fourth guy.
Yeah, so obviously 2019, Florida State's terrible, but he's awesome.
Yep.
Has over 1,000 yards, 9 touchdowns. 2020, they hire Mike Norvell. Everyone's jazzed up, including myself, thinking like, all Norvell has done at Memphis is produce NFL talent. This guy's more talented in theory than like anyone he's had. He's a potential go like if it had he declared, I think he would have been like a fourth day, early day. I don't know. It was a deep receiver class, but he would have been a day three guy. Everyone, I think, was thinking this guy can be a high day two pick with a big season. He's such a freaky athlete. If he cleans up some of the drops, like he's a mismatch machine with his size and his speed. Then there's the questionable decisions by Mike Norvell that rubbed some players on the team the wrong way, rightfully so. And then the Florida State kind of never jived. And then he struggled with drops. He only played six games. He only had 289 yards. Now I think his draft stock is dependent on blowing up the combine to get drafted.
Yeah, definitely.
So he's going to be a strange one because I really liked what I saw in 2019. I thought he had such a high ceiling.
I think the big question even going in was the drops because they pop up so much on tape. And then, yeah, I think it even might have gotten worse this year. I felt like he had that one decent game and then just kind of, like you said, only played six games and just fell off the map. And you know what he felt like? The popular, trendy, let's get Patrick Mahomes another weapon mock at the, you know, at the pick 30th in the summer, you know what I mean, or 32nd. It felt like he was sneaking into there and, like you said, early day two talk. And it just all evaporated. And, yeah, if there's no combine, that's going to hurt him, and I genuinely have no idea where he should go right now.
Okay, my number four is Iowa State quarterback Brock Purdy, who's returning for his senior year in Ames.
Purdy is, like, pretty much my five, but I'll call him six to change this up. Definitely one of the biggest quarterback faller. I mean, it happened quick. It was pretty swift. It was, like, the first 2 weeks where everyone's like, yeah, the fans of his. Because I thought maybe he was a fourth-round guy, potentially. Not a high upside, but, like, a decent guy and, like, maybe a potential guy that's going to come out there and manage games well for you. You were lower on him in the summer, and then you saw it quick the first two, three games that he just doesn't have it.
And obviously Iowa State had a fantastic year, but even his numbers dropped off big time, and he only played one less game. And he threw for 1,200 less yards, had 11 less touchdowns.
Yeah, that's terrible. I mean, and just the eye test of it. And yeah, it truly is funny that Iowa State was really good this year, and he was really bad. I mean, the promising thing was his best game was the bowl game, so that's good.
He's a solid college quarterback, and I mean, I just don't think he has the physical tools to be anything more than a late day three prospect. Even if he has another, like, he's going to have a huge senior season, I think, at Iowa State to be anything more than viewed as a day three guy. Like, I think Colt McCoy is his ceiling.
Yeah, like a long-ish term backup, that seems like the ceiling. I totally agree. And, like, I was really interested in what he could do. Like between the hash marks, and like I thought that was really impressive, his passing, and then, but you know, like not long, like 20 yards max, and I thought like the accuracy there was impressive, but it's not like that's a great trait to be elite in, but that was the promising end of it, and then it just all fell apart.
My five, I put a tie between LSU nose tackle Tyler Shelvin, mm-hmm. Oklahoma center Creed Humphrey, mainly because they were both being mocked as like top 20 picks, and neither are going to be top 20 picks. Creed Humphrey didn't have a bad year by any means at Oklahoma. I just think it was a guy who'd been in college football and played at such a high level for a while, so he was just a trendy name to put there. I don't know if he'll even be the first center off the board. To me, he's more of he's going to be probably a mid-day two plug-and-play starter guy, but he's not a first-round guy. And then Michelvin, I think it was just part of that LSU lore, and he was such a fun nose tackle for them. And then obviously he didn't play this year, which isn't going to, like, I don't think it would have changed much opinion if he did, though.
I agree. I think that's a good take, because some guys I had on my list were guys that opted out and kind of suffered that way. But I think Shelvin is one that, even if he did play, I think that was just like a nice filler. We don't really know what this interior defensive line class looks like yet. Let's mock him in the first round. Because we like who he is and we like what he can do, but there's not big upside there.
He's a very good run defending nose tackle, but yeah, that's not a guy you take in the first round in today's NFL.
Definitely. I had all those guys, so I'll jump to my next one. Who I think is a little interesting to follow up. How about Jalen Twyman, who also didn't play this year and kind of got hurt by that as well? Because he was up there amongst the IDL group, and now I don't even know. Like I think he can definitely kind of reignite his stock in the process, but he another guy that kind of suffered from opting out. And it's kind of interesting to see, like, who got dinged big for opting out and who didn't. And it's just kind of feel like a casualty of chance. You know what I mean? It's kind of weird.
Yeah, no, there's plenty of guys. They're just not in our minds right now, which doesn't help. But we're not the talent evaluators, so that doesn't really matter.
It's a good point. I do wonder, though, if those guys are going to, you know, have their names reignited in the process.
I threw a couple of honorable mentions down as well. Marvin Wilson, who you talked about. I put Kyle Trask down.
Yeah.
And Hamza Nasiruddin.
That's a good one. You know who else? Quincy Roche. I threw in his honorable mention too, who kind of just got overshadowed by, he was already overshadowed, and then he got jumped by Jalen Phillips, who you could put as one of the top 10 risers probably.
Hey, but Roche gets the Senior Bowl, so who knows?
There you go.
Okay, you want to do risers now. Do you want to start with 5 or 1?
Your call. I called the last one, and you start this time.
Okay, let's start with 5.
Who you got?
I put Kadarius Toney 5.
I see, for me, risers more hotly contested. I had a lot more names, and I ended up with Toney as my 6.
For me, like, last year, 2019, he was a bit player. They had a deep receiver group, and he didn't really have a consistent role. Only had 286 yards, only touched the ball 24 times. This year kind of was the perfect complement to Kyle Pitts as the big downfield playmaker, Toney the yak freak, the big deep separator. Ends up with over 900 receiving yards, 11 total touchdowns, added some on the ground, and is a return man, and went from I don't know, interesting gadget maybe day 3 to potential first round pick who you mentioned Terry to the Chiefs 32nd. Now you're starting to see Toney there.
Yeah, no, that's a good one. Again, I've said it so many times, but I didn't fall in love with any player this season more than I fell in love with Kadarius Toney, and he's definitely one of the biggest risers, and especially to me and like you said, I really in the summer he wasn't too on the radar, and yeah, it was kind of potential, and now I think he's probably worthy of a first round draft pick. Similarly, my 5th guy, I put Mac Jones here. And another guy who I think it was just like, okay, he's a game manager before the season. He might lose the starting job. He's not much. And he elevated that to an insanely good college quarterback year and a potential first-round pick.
Yeah, I put him as an honorable mention just because maybe I'm a little lower on him than the numbers say.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, he did go from essentially a nobody who everyone, including myself, thought Bryce Young would beat out for the starting quarterback job to Heisman finalist, national champion, probably the only quarterback who's selected on day 2.
Yeah, that's probably fair. And again, he could sneak into round 1. I don't know if he should, but no, definitely. He definitely could be the only quarterback on day 2. And if it is, I think he's probably a round 2 pick.
Yeah, so I went into some of his tape over the weekend, and he's not gonna blow anybody. Like, physically, there's not a ton there, but he's very tight mechanically. He's smart with his decision making. He's pretty accurate. Like, he's a Teddy Bridgewater-esque quarterback at best, I think.
It's an interesting comp. I thought it was kind of funny, like watching him last night, where he there was moments where he just absolutely I know it's not his game, but like, refusing to run, but the good thing was he was finding the outlets, and I don't know, I thought that was a funny thing. And then at the end of the game he did start taking off, and I'm still not sure how I feel about Mac Jones, but I definitely agree that, like, it's not some the high-end tools aren't there, but he's composed, and he gets the job done.
Number 4 for me is North Carolina running back Javonte Williams.
Finish your drink, Rob.
He, not to say he was like not a bit, like, he was a big time player in 2019 for them too. I just think lack of spotlight, and
they hadn't totally unlocked that offense yet. Like, he ran for 900 yards last year. But this year, he was way more involved as a pass catcher. There was more of a consistent role in the running game with him. He set the North Carolina touchdown record with 22, ran for over 1,100, and kind of solidified himself as a day two pick. Well, I don't think he was really on anybody's radar, at least heavily, before the season.
Yeah.
And now he's potentially the third back off the board after Etienne, Najee Harris, and he's kind of, to me, at this point, the guy who, second round, you want a starting running back. This is the guy. Like, I really, really like, I did a couple games on him recently. I really have a nice grade on him tonight. Like, I think he can be a Kareem Hunt-esque running back.
I think I agree with everything you just said. And, yeah, he kind of feels like, at least the first day two back that you're going to draft to be I don't want to say a bell cow, but an RB1. And, like, you know, his teammate Michael Carter, who we both love, he's more of the, you know, RB2, you mix him in or split with an RB1, whatever. And, you know, Kenneth Gainwell, also similar boat. Javonte Williams definitely did more for himself than any other running back this year.
Man runs angry.
Yeah. I think he had the most broken tackles this year, I believe, off the top of my head. Yeah.
I think so. Okay, 3 for me, because you also have Williams 4. I'm not just jumping the line. 3 for me, I put Davion Nixon, the Iowa defensive tackle.
He fell into my honorable mention category, but definitely. I think he's still rising, which is the fun part of it.
2019 rotational player, 29 tackles, 5.5 TFLs, 3 sacks. Bursts onto the scene this year, full-time starter. Just 8 games, has 13.5 TFLs, 5.5 sacks, that 71-yard pick 6. And I think after Barmore, like, he's the guy who I think has the best chance, especially Jordan Davis going back to Georgia. He's the guy who's got the best chance to be the second defensive tackle off the board. Really a lot of upside there with his athleticism. He's raw as hell, but, like, he is so twitchy for a big man. He plays like he's a classic 3-tech, like gap shooting 3-tech. And he's, like, I wouldn't be shocked that, I think you're right, like, he's still kind of rising as people get into the tape a little more. And then if there's a combine, I think he's going to do very well there. And I don't know, like, top 50, kind of went from not being on anyone's radar to being a top 50 guy.
Yeah, like a guy that you see on everyone's top 50, exactly. And, like, I think there is the potential that he's still the first IDL, but I think Barmore kind of solidified it with his stretch. Similarly,
I think so too.
Yeah, similarly to Nixon, a guy that's probably still rising, but we've seen him, you know, get into the top 15s now. I put Georgia edge rusher Azeez Ojulari here at 3, who another guy that just came down the stretch as an absolute monster. We saw him in the bowl game against Cincinnati where he just took over that third quarter, and you know, another twitched up guy. And I don't know where his limit is in this class. Another guy, if the combine happens and he's there, I think he's going to absolutely tear it up. And probably going to end up as a top 15 guy when it's all said and done, I think.
Yeah, he's in my honorable mentions. But yeah, he's kind of very similar. Like, there's more hype about him entering the year than some of these other guys.
True.
But I don't think to the point where he's now viewed by a lot of people as a top 15 pick and potentially the first pass rusher off the board in a class who, again, no clear-cut number one guy, but a really strong group throughout.
Definitely. I think the number one is pretty obvious, but I'm curious if you're as your number two. I think we'll have the same guy.
For 2?
Yeah.
I got Zaven Collins.
Oh, you know what? I almost forgot about Collins. He should have been in there. There we go. That's a good one. I'm glad you brought him up. That's a huge one.
Really productive as a freshman in 2018 and as a sophomore in 2019.
Yep.
But just kind of took it to the next level in 2020. I think he got more national attention, too, because more people were watching random Group of 5 games.
That's a good point. And Tulsa was good, too.
And Tulsa was good.
Yeah.
And he had, I mean, he was the most important defensive player to any team's success.
I think you're 100% right.
Like, he had the game-winning pick 6. I think he had 100 game-winning pick. He ended up with 7.5 TFLs, 4 sacks, 4 picks. just 6'4", 260, ridiculous athlete for that size, former high school quarterback, went from, again, not really on the radar to instantly on the radar after the Oklahoma State game.
Yeah.
Where they hung with the Oklahoma State was ranked pretty high at that point. And I think a lot of people view him as this very scheme-diverse linebacker who can rush the passer, who can drop into coverage, big as hell. I like the KJ Wright comp. He's just really fun. He's got a chance to sneak into the back of the first round.
Have you seen the KJ Wright thing anywhere else, or is it just me?
It was just you. But don't pat yourself on the back too much.
I think that's more of an honor that for you to say that you like that and no one else has. No, definitely. I almost forgot about Collins. He'd be here for me. And yeah, I mean, definitely the most, I don't know, the defensive MVP, if you want to give the award like that. But, you know, he never won it because he doesn't play in the Power 5. Anyways, second for me, guy not on that great of a team, but popped into the radar because they ran the ball amazing. I put Christian Darrisaw, the Vautech tackle.
That's a good one.
I'm surprised.
I didn't even think of him.
It's funny that I forgot about Collins and you forgot about Darrisaw. Yeah.
I love Darrisaw.
Yeah, who's looks like a top 15 lock and a lock to be tackled too. Slater's in there, and Slater's another riser, but not to the quite same extent as Darrisaw, who definitely looks like he can speak.
I think Rashawn Slater's locked into tackle two.
Do you? Okay. So we're tackle three at the low end and top 15, but, probably.
Like, I wouldn't be shocked if the end of the day my board has Sewell, Darrisaw, and Slater in the top 12.
Yeah. No, it feels.
I love Darrisaw.
Yeah. And he was just a fucking run mauler and a beast. And, didn't feel like we got a really great look. I haven't dug into the tape yet, but as a pass protector there in that Vautech offense, but it looks like he's got the goods all around. And yeah, huge, huge, huge riser this year.
Yeah, he's fun as hell. That's a good one.
Number one's pretty easy, I think.
Yeah, Zach Wilson went from interesting, zany, day three, group of five independent quarterback.
Day three if he's lucky, yeah.
Yeah. Hey, well, some of us knew
early. You liked him? Not to this extent, but you liked him, I remember.
He played through 2019 with a shoulder injury, and he was fun, but, like, nothing you would get excited about necessarily. 14 touchdowns in total, 9 games, 2,300 passing yards. 12 games this year, 3,600 yards, 43 total touchdowns, only 3 picks, 73.5% completion rate, and 11 per attempt. Was in similar to Zaven Collins, he got attention right away because I think, again, more like BYU was playing right away, so people were seeing him right away and seeing his kind of his carefree, just rip it kind of style. People started getting excited. I remember you were talking about him pretty early on. And he went from, not even on the day three radar. He went from fun college quarterback to potential second overall pick.
Yeah, insane. Well, I got his stats from last year up. 2,300 yards, 11 touchdowns, and 9 picks.
I just said them.
Oh, did you? Sorry. I was reading my own notes. I apologize.
But, I'm offended.
And, you know, but one thing you also said, I was listening to this part, the shoulder injury. and, you know, I think it kind of resulted in a bit of a funny windup and release from him last year. And, you know, we know he's a guy that's trying to do a lot. And I think last year when BYU wasn't as strong and he wasn't 100%, we saw him holding on to the ball too long. And the big plays didn't come off of that. And then this year it all just clicked together. And, yeah, he's clearly the biggest riser in the entire process.
It sucks, though, because BYU was going to play a really Power 5 heavy schedule this year and then didn't, obviously, because of COVID. And so he didn't play a single Power 5 team and put up these gaudy numbers. So I think that's the one thing that you got to think about with him.
Yeah, definitely. But I will say that it wasn't – like if it for a non-Power 5 schedule, it was about as strong as it could be, right?
And the other thing, like he showed potential as a sophomore despite the shoulder injury. And playing Pac-12, against Pac-12 opponents, like he played USC and Washington last year, and I think you could see some of the good stuff there at times. But again, the shoulder injury really held him back. They totally unlocked the offense this year. Dax Milne took a step up. The offensive line dominated. Yeah, I think, like, again, I'm right now I have Justin Fields and Trey Lance above him, but I can see, I understand the, like, the high potential. All four of them have such potential.
It's a fun group, and it's almost like, I mean, I don't want to say it's almost like Trevor Lawrence is getting enough appreciation because he is, but it's kind of just the cherry on top of the sundae with Trevor Lawrence.
I can't wait. I'm excited to see when, like, we're kind of way more into it and how both of our top 10 quarterbacks compare to each other. Just especially because after those top five, I think it's just, there's so many different people to consider.
You know what else is fun? I think there's going to be a lot of teams that these four guys can go to, and I think there's going to be a lot of quarterback movement. I mean, we're just seeing Deshaun Watson potentially asking for a trade. We don't know exactly, but I don't think he's going to end up. But I think there's
going to
be
he's going to Pittsburgh.
He's going to the Steelers. Hey, Brugler mocked Mac Wilson to the Steelers, so
I know.
but no, this could be a huge year for quarterback movement this spring, and it's fun how many teams are vying. I mean, we know Lawrence is going to Jacksonville, but the other three, it's interesting how many teams are kind of in the mix there, and seeing where all these guys land is going to be super exciting.
That's why you should listen to us all year long.
Sick plug. Do you have any honorable mentions?
I mean, I put Devonta Smith down in honorable mention just because he went from. There was a point this season where I believe I said he might be the receiver of the class who falls to early second round, and we're all like, why? And because he's so good. And then, no, now he like might be going third overall.
Sorry, let me say something quick on Devontae. It was kind of funny that if you look at the preseason mocks, you'd see him in the top 15, 20 range. And then I didn't really look, but it felt like after the first couple of weeks, first of all, Waddle was kind of a little more the star of the show. And it felt like that's where the slip happened. And then obviously it fucking, like a rubber band, it bounced back to huge.
Yeah, he's my favorite. His personality too, he's so likable.
Definitely.
I also put Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoa just because he was a guy I liked over the summer, but I didn't think he was going to be a top 20 lock.
That's a good one.
He is that.
Let's go in. I'll throw out some other names. Slater, who I think there were fans of, but like you said, he looks like OT2 now.
Which is funny you say that because a guy who opted out, and we talked about how that impacted other guys, but it's because he opted out, more people, I feel like, dug into him maybe earlier, and then like he's the only person who I saw handle Chase Young.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. It's kind of interesting to see how the stocks went for opto guys. Obviously we've never seen it before, so it's kind of a fun experiment to see if this ever happens again. Jalen Phillips from Miami.
You just wish another pandemic on us?
No, fuck. I mean, if we see this trend continue in regular years, like we've talked about this year. Jalen Phillips, I put here too, who obviously transferred from UCLA to Miami and was awesome with no Rousseau there. Who else do I got? Landon Dickerson, who kind of caught the hearts and minds of America and helped himself. I think those ones are the big ones. There's a couple other names, but I'll save them for next episode. That's not a thing we're doing.
Yeah, when we do AJ's riser corner.
It's a fun year. I will say it was my least favorite college football season ever that I've watched, but very fun for the NFL draft.
It's just because Michigan sucks. That's a bad reason.
Michigan sucks and the opt-outs and the wonkiness.
Harbaugh's back for five more, baby.
Yeah, that all sucks.